Kansans sometimes get picked on. Yeah, we've heard about how flat it is, and jokes about Toto and Dorothy just stop being funny after a while. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we'll meet with a couple of dedicated Kansans with a mission to transform the state's reputation. These people have turned their love for Kansas into something that goes way beyond a hobby. First, meet Marcy Penner, who recently spent a year visiting every town in the state. We'll also hear from one of the guys behind an irreverent Facebook page that can't seem to assert its love of Kansas without swearing. Get their best-kept Kansas secrets right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and our topic for today is Kansas pride. For reasons we hope to uncover today, Kansas is a state that people tend to either love with a feverish, all-consuming passion or hate with much the same. Whichever camp you're in, today's show is for you. To get started, let's say hello to Marcy Penner. Her credentials as an expert on Kansas pride are almost too extensive to list. As executive director of the Kansas Sampler Foundation, she's written guidebooks, she hosts an annual Kansas festival, and she's visited every single town in the state. Good morning, Marcy. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
So the books that you write have the line "For Explorers" in the title, the Kansas Guidebook for Explorers, for example. Who are you talking about? What are explorers and why do they experience Kansas differently?
I think the tourists, there's this misconception that there's not tourism in Kansas. And, you know, we don't have the oceans and the mountains, but we have a state rich for the explorer types, the people that want to search, the people that want to get involved in the search by talking to the locals, by appreciating the nuances, the details. So in every town, I feel there's something that an explorer type would enjoy. And we prove that by going to every town and seeing these places ourselves and then relating about them from personal experience.
Just to play devil's advocate here, because I totally understand where you're coming from, but couldn't someone say, well, yeah, you don't have the mountains, you don't have the ocean, why should I have to work so hard to find what's great about this place?
Well, that's a great question. And I think if you don't want to work at all, maybe Kansas isn't for you. But we have people who are tired of just, you know, coming to a place and looking in at the canyon rim and seeing the canyon, and the canyon does all the work for you. I think you can go with the layers of exploring Kansas, you get a richer experience by having to do a little work, by having to start a conversation in a local cafe or on the barbershop bench that's sitting outside a little small town barbershop. I would venture to say that the small amount of work you do, after a while, you won't feel like it's work. It becomes part of an adventure that you are creating, and that's what makes it so special.
Well, speaking of adventures, you recently visited every town in Kansas on a trip you called the Explorer Research Voyage. How long did that take?
Actually, I went to every town in the beginning of the 2000s for one of our guidebooks, and we are now repeating that trip. We have about every town in 80 counties to go, so we're going to resume that trip tomorrow. And you know, it's just an awesome thing to see how towns change, how they start believing in themselves, how they how they're proud of such little things. And by going into every town, we get a chance to feel what it's like comparing them, contrasting all the towns. And it's really very interesting. And things as small as the world's largest sidewalk connecting two small towns is a source of pride in Kansas.
Tell us about that. What was that again?
Yeah, it's the largest sidewalk
largest that, sidewalk
that connected two small towns. And one town, this is in Crawford County in southeast Kansas in the coal mining area. So back in the early 1900s, 1920s, 30s, they made the sidewalk because one small town had lost its school and they didn't want the kids to have to walk on the road. So they created this sidewalk to offer the kids an easy way, a safe way to get from their town to where the school was. No school buses during that time. So, and now it's been in the, I think, the Guinness Book of World Records, and it's one of our eight wonders of Kansas customs, actually. And they've done a great job telling about it.
I want to get back to some of the specific towns and the specific things you found there later, but I'm something else I'm intrigued by is the Explorer Chicken Fried Steak List. What is that?
Well, there's three things that make a chicken fried steak so good that we call it the Explorer Chicken Fried Steak. So that's fresh meat, hand-breaded, and the most important part is that it's grill or pan-fried instead of deep-fried. And you can definitely tell the difference. And if you have those three characteristics going, you have one heck of a great chicken fried steak.
Well, Marcy, why chicken fried steak? Because on the one hand, it's a classic all-American food. But on the other hand, this isn't a specialty that dispels myth about Kansas cuisine or Kansas culture, for that matter.
Well, you're right. But there's this fine balance about giving people the stereotype of Kansas, but then also showing them that we have, like at the Bunker Hill Cafe, you get fresh salads and tomatoes from the garden and as fresh as you can get it in this little tiny town of about 80 people. So without the chicken fried steak, you don't have the opportunity to show the other side of Kansas. You have to show them both.
Well, let's take a look at many sides of Kansas, continuing with another guest who represents a slightly different angle on Kansas pride. On the surface, anyway, he and his buddies have a more confrontational approach, taking Kansas apologists to task head-on. I'd like to welcome Will Averill, one of the founders of a Facebook page with 65,280 followers. The name of the Facebook page is something we can't say on the radio, so for the duration of the hour, we'll be using a sanitized broadcast version of the name. We'll be calling it Bleep You, I'm from Kansas. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. I know it must have been hard for you to enter Missouri on your way to the studio this morning.
It was difficult, but luckily I got through the checkpoints okay.
So explain the premise of your Facebook group. What is its raison d'etre, so to speak?
Well, its raison d'etre is to promote Kansas pride by pointing out all the cool things about the state and the amazing people, artists, and communities, and important Kansans, but all done in a very kind of tongue-in-cheek way and with quite a bit of fun snark.
What prompted you to start it?
Well, I'm born and raised in Lawrence, Kansas, and then when I turned 28, I moved to Norwich, England for about 8 years. And while I was living in Norwich, which was a little bit like living in Lawrence, Kansas, in that it's a university town and an otherwise very rural agricultural area, so it's kind of a lateral move. But while I was living there, I would get, of course, the Dorothy Toto jokes, many references to Westboro Baptist Church. And then the question, the very odd question to my mind, does it snow in Kansas?
Why were people asking that?
Because it would snow in England because it's mainly a temperate area, about maybe like an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch, and everything would just shut down. There was a one point where Heathrow Airport was shut down nearly a week due to about a half a foot of snow. But for some reason, they had so little knowledge of the geography that other than knowing about Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, there really wasn't much other frame of reference. And it started to get me a little upset, a little angry, and excuse me. And while I was there, I was doing some spoken word poetry, and that was quite a bit of fun. And so I wrote a poem by the title, Bleep You, I'm from Kansas, which I performed both in Norwich and then in London, and later went on to perform at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. What I discovered doing that was that it did really actually play over there. People seem to love the kind of underdog nature of saying, hey, you know, you guys complain about snow, but here's how terrible it is in Kansas. and so it got good play. And then when I came back here, there was one day where, I was just thinking about it and thinking about the idea and decided, well, let's put up a Facebook page and see if anybody else is feeling this way. And it just grew exponentially very, very quickly. That was a year ago, September.
You and your collaborators brand yourselves with the famous John Stewart Curry image of John Brown in a tornado-whipped frenzy holding a gun in one hand and a Bible in the other. This image, sort of like chicken fried steak, is not exactly stereotype-defying.
No. But what I love about the image is that I feel that there are two parts to Kansas. There's the Midwestern modesty, humility, and sense of humor, and then there's kind of the heck raisin side of us. And I think for too long, one of the reasons we've had this stereotype, and one of the reasons the Dorothy stereotype has perpetuated, is that we, you know, are generally a very polite folk, and we don't like to cause a scene, and we'll just, you know, kind of smile and nod and know that it's not true but not say anything. But the John Brown image to me is the part of us that's just like, you know, we are here, we are Kansas, and we are not going to take it anymore. So so that's why that image was used and I was really drawn to.
What were some of the first posts on the Bleep You, I'm from Kansas Facebook page?
The very first post was and I cannot remember her name, but the student who was you know, sort of called to task by her school for tweeting about Sam Brown back in the Capitol building. And so it was kind of a tribute to her. And then the second post was about Big Brutus, the world's largest steam shovel that is down in southeast Kansas. It was all very tongue in cheek. Most of them were just, you know, all exclamation points like, we got the world's largest ball of twine, bleep, bleep. You know, here's Big Brutus, bleep, bleep. But somehow that did manage to catch on, and the posts have since sort of changed and evolved with the growing of the page.
Yeah, what has it evolved into?
Well, I think whereas it was very ironic in the beginning and very much aimed at just coming from an angry and frustrated and sort of big showman-y place, as it's developed its own community of Kansans from across the state and has developed its own sort of style and an importance that I didn't necessarily see, nor Sarah or Jack, the other admins on the page, that we really didn't see in the beginning. Where it really hit home for me for the first time was the first Veterans Day that we had, and we asked for a shout out or a call out for photos and stories of veterans from Kansas, and we got so many amazing stories and so many heart-wrenching stories that all of a sudden, you know, while we still want to temper it with the fun and the snark, it became sort of a much more meaningful community.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I'm talking with Will Averill of the Facebook page Bleep You, I'm from Kansas, as well as to Marcy Penner, who's joining us by phone from Inman, Kansas. She is the executive director of the Kansas Sampler Foundation. Marcy, what are you hearing in Will's comments? Does anything resonate with you, or are you coming from a totally different perspective here?
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan. Wendy and I are a big fan, and it's kind of like the chicken fried steak and the fresh salad. It's this wonderful balance that you need. It's got an edge to it. It's got more of a millennial draw to it, and you know, it makes you proud in this way that you don't. Most Kansans don't think about all that. You know, we are nice, so it's just a tremendous page. And 65,000 followers is awesome. And just really, hats off to Will and his crew. It is excellent.
Well, Marcy, not every state necessarily requires many generations of people making nearly full-time, if not full-time, jobs out of their devotion to Kansas, to their state. What do you think it is about Kansas that maybe asks this of you?
It's the underdog syndrome, and I guess I'm drawn to that. I lived in the Philadelphia area for 5 years, Madison, Wisconsin for five, Lawrence for five. And when I came back to Kansas and started to travel around, there's something about the independent streak, the struggle to make it. For instance, three quarters of the towns in Kansas have less than a 1,500 population. And that means it's all volunteer-led. There's nobody paid in the town to solve the complex problem of how to sustain a town when you maybe lose a grocery store or a school. So there's, you know, there's a lot of us who don't get paid much, but we're incredibly drawn to the passion.
Marcy, grocery stores are actually major destinations in your guidebook. Take, for instance, the entry for LeGrand's Grocery in Alma, Kansas, which I hope I pronounced correctly. That entry starts this way. It's easy to sing the praises of this 100-year-old opera house turned Ford dealership turned grocery and cafe. Not every guidebook for really adventurous travelers would include grocery stores.
We try to make a difference with our guidebooks and encourage our the readers and the explorers to go make a difference. So we try to explain that the wholesale truck doesn't even stop at a grocery store unless they buy $10,000 worth of groceries a week. And when you look at the population, that's just a really difficult business to keep going. So the explorer types want to know about those kind of things. They want to go in and spend a little bit of money, and they'll feel good about it. So our guidebook just helps introduce a pathway to not only seeing Kansas, but in a way getting involved in the drama of everyday everyday life, just trying to sustain these small towns.
Speaking of everyday life, one of my favorite entries in your book is the Overbrook Livestock Commission. I, as a layperson, really wouldn't have guessed that I would be welcome at a livestock commission if I'm not interested in purchasing cattle, which, for the record, I'm not. Is this really acceptable behavior? Because I would love to hang out at a cattle sale, but I'm not in the market for a cow.
I'm so glad you saw that one. We have quite a few livestock sale barns in the guidebook. It is the epitome of rural culture. And we've been going in them for our latest guidebook research, and we go in with a camera, and they literally stop the auction, and everybody looks at us, and the auctioneer guy says, "What are you doing here? Are you from the New York Times?" And we tell them, and it's all a big joke, and they say, "Just make sure you sit on your hands and you know, don't buy something." But it's a slice of culture that we are welcome to go in and be a part of. And people don't really know that. The guidebook gives permission to enter some of these places that you'd otherwise not realize you can just go in and experience.
When you say rural culture, like that this is the epitome of rural culture, what exactly do you mean by that phrase? Do you think that's a function of geography or something else?
Well, when Dad and I did our first guidebook, a town would say, "We don't have anything to offer. Go to the next town." We kept hearing that. So we came up with eight things that, for our definition of rural culture, it's the combination of architecture, art, commerce, cuisine, customs, geography, history, and people. To us, those eight things make up rural culture. And we tell our explorers, if you don't have a brochure for a town, just look for those eight things. You could also call it just the cultural elements, because you can go to Kansas City or Oxford, England, and look for those same elements. And it will help you see the town more clearly when you look for those categories.
Well, so I want you to walk us through what you do when you arrive in a town, when you're doing your research for your guidebooks or for the blogging that you do. Let's take, for example, the town of Zenda, because I enjoyed that entry and in your blog. And it's a place where a lot of things have, in fact, been abandoned. So I'd love to hear the story of how you landed in that town and found your way around and became kind of intimately familiar with it in a way that went beyond the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. You drive into a town and you don't realize it, but anybody who is there in the town is noticing our car because it's wrapped and explains what we're doing. But in the case of Zenda, we went into the Zenda Lumberyard restaurant. And
that was your first stop?
That was our first stop because it was about lunchtime and we wanted to be there for that. And we go in and you first sort of test the waitress and you don't tell them what you're doing really. And luckily in that town, the owners were there and they remembered me being in there before. And we had a very nice chat and the library was closed, but if we had wanted to be in, they would have called somebody and got us in. And so in Zenda, the school is closed now and it's abandoned, but we drove around to see if there was something about the school that we wanted to put in. We were looking for the miniature replicas of downtown Zenda that used to be in the second story of an abandoned building, but they're in the library now. We went into this kind of combination gas station, place to buy some smokes or buy some oil for your car and engage conversation there. It's just a matter of finding where there's somebody. It might be the library. It might be the post office. We often find old men sitting on benches in front of cafes, and that's always a great group to engage.
And they welcome that engagement?
Well, you have to set the tone. You know, they wonder what you're doing. They first of all joke about the car, and after a while we've learned how to engage them. In the town of Hoisington, we caught about 8 men after work. It was like 6 o'clock, and they were all sitting on this abandoned stoop, an abandoned filling station, and they were all dirty and drinking beers, and we saw that they were noticing our car. So we just simply drove up there and they asked what we were doing. And so our line of questioning there was about the bars in the county and just went on to have a good conversation. You talk about different things with the librarian that you might talk about with the guys on the bench drinking beers. So,
well, Marcy, real love, which you obviously have for Kansas, but real love and even unconditional love, these things require some degree of criticism. And I'm wondering if you had to offer Kansas and Kansans a little constructive criticism, what would it be? Is there room for improvement in this state?
I would say don't settle. We get into this mode of thinking very commonplace, how to solve our issues by doing what's been done before. And my advice is to think outside the box, to engage your what we call power-ups, your 21 to 39 year olds who are rural by choice. Engage them, empower them, and don't keep doing things the way we've always done them. I think we've got a lot of potential. In small towns, it's easier to get things done than in big towns. So if we can think outside the box, excite the young people, we can make things happen, and many towns have.
Will, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I think that's an incredibly important point, and I really like the idea of power-ups. Although I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed that I'm on the very tail end of being a power-up at this point. as of June 28th, I'll no longer be a power-up. But
age is a state of mind.
It is a state of mind.
Right.
I think it is vital that we hold on to these smaller communities, and I think that there's a recognition of that. I think there's some great developmental programs in place by the Department of Commerce that are working towards getting people who would otherwise not look at a rural lifestyle to very much consider it. And I hope that these things are effective. I think there are programs of a similar nature. I was listening to NPR a few weeks ago, and there was some talk about sort of the revitalization of Des Moines, Iowa. And I know, granted, Des Moines is not rural necessarily, but I think it can fit into a similar box where what people were realizing was that you can get work done in this day and age from just about anywhere. And so rather than centering in a large city where prices are where everything's very, very expensive, to come and invest in a rural community where you can have both the affordability and the space, because there's just, you know, if there's one thing we've got here in Kansas, it's a lot of space. So, you know, if people want to come and stretch out and have that space and take advantage of that, I think that is going to be the key going forward to saving some of those small communities.
Well, Will, you mentioned that you were in England doing spoken word poetry. What is it that you're doing now in Kansas? Is this partly your story that you're telling right now?
Yeah. You know, definitely the pages has become an integral part of that. We are developing a web page, which will be titled FYIFK, where I hope that we can participate more actively in the journalistic side of things, where the stories, we can get opinions from both sides. Because I think it's too easy to, and one thing that I noticed in the UK was it was the first time during the Obama election was the first time that I had seen the phrase red state and blue state. And I find that to be an incredibly divisive moniker. Because I think it first of all, pits, you know, the coasts against the Midwest too often, but it also pits people in the state against each other in ways that I don't believe are correct. I don't believe they're right. They're simplistic, and they're perpetuating that stereotype.
I think it can make individuals feel invisible.
It really can. It really can. From both sides, and it, you know, when everything's kind of down to a soundbite or a statistic, where you look at that red blue, it's too easy to dismiss us and a lot of the Midwest from the debate. So I hope that we can go ahead and move beyond that, and you know, see the beauty of the state, and also hopefully, you know, people will move out to these communities and keep that revitalized, because there is a lot of a lot of neat stuff out there.
Are the followers of your page typically Kansans themselves, or are they people who have some tie to Kansas but who actually reside elsewhere? I'm asking about this because I'm thinking about what you're saying, and wow, maybe we can convince ourselves that we're more complicated than people say we are, but can we convince the outside world, and does that matter?
You know, that's a very good question. We do have a strong expat community. There are people from all over the world, actually, who have liked the page and enjoy the sunsets and the pictures and just those reminders of home.
Well, when we come back from our break, we'll want to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have strong feelings about Kansas and its reputation? What triggers your pro or anti-Kansas fervor? And how do you show it? 816-235-2888 to tell your story. That's 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman in Central Standard. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. I'm here with Will Averill and Marcy Penner, and we are talking about Kansas pride. What triggers it, and what is it like? Because a lot of people see Kansas as this flat place, especially if they drive down I-70, where you don't have the prettiest view necessarily. You have to get past the highway for the hills even, let alone the mountains, which are woefully absent in the minds of some. But our guests today have a lot of Kansas pride, and they've been telling us what informs it. And we'd like to hear what informs yours. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And I want to get back to Marcy Penner. Marcy, tell us about the most recent Kansas town you visited.
Well, we were in Wamego for our Kansas Sampler Festival. But as far as exploring a town, St. George in Pottawatomie County was the most recent one. St. George is one of the things I love there is this trough of water. It was built when the pioneers came through and for the horses to be able to have a place to drink, and it's from a spring. So the whole state might be in a drought, but there's one place you can count on there being water, and that's the trough on a main street. It's a cement trough now, with spring water just running over the sides of the trough. But they also have these wooden elevators, wooden grain elevators, which are some that you don't see anywhere else. There's a champion cottonwood tree there, or maybe that was a bur oak. Anyway, just a little town with awesome little things.
Marcy, some of the places that you mention in your materials include ghost towns, and I wonder if you can give some of the more daring explorers tips on visiting ghost towns and how to do that maybe safely is too dramatic of a word.
Well, in Kansas, I mean, we have the smallest incorporated town has 6 people. That's Freeport in Harper County. And I wouldn't call that a ghost town because there's still people there. But like the town of Quincy, you can see, and that's in Greenwood County, you can see houses behind trees and shrubs that, of course, aren't lived in. You can see remnants of sidewalks and remnants of life as it was maybe even 10, 20 years ago. But it's kind of spooky in a way, you know, not really, but the things you see behind the trees and shrubs gives it the ghosty feel. But there's still some life in a lot of towns that I see listed as ghost towns. For me, it's when nobody lives there anymore.
Well, let's hear from some of our callers, and we'll be getting back to our guests in just a moment. Let's talk to Philip in Midtown, Kansas City. Hi, Phil.
Hi there.
I hope you don't mind me calling you Phil.
Oh, no, that's fine. As long as you call me for dinner. The basic problem, which I thought of when I was listening earlier, is it's very difficult to convince people to move to an area, and particularly a rural area, that projects an image, frankly, of social intolerance. And, you know, that's really difficult to overcome. And that's Kansas, certainly Kansas's image.
Oh, I think we just lost Phil, but Will, why don't you start by taking that?
I agree. I think it's a very, very difficult problem. And I think, again, it goes on to stereotypes, because I think that the individual people in those communities, if the time was taken to get to know them, are going to be much more open-minded than you think. However, I think that the perception nationally, for example, I think there was a kind of ill-advised LA billboard campaign where it was like, you know, people on the freeway would see this thing that said Kansas, and with a whole bunch of wide open space, there's nothing but space here. I can't remember the exact slogan, but you know, it's like it didn't necessarily do anything to sort of to assuage that myth that it's nothing but you know, a lot of space and intolerant people. I think the only thing that we really can do to counter that is to continue to promote the place that I think Marcy and I both see, and I think a lot of people see, which is a series of welcoming communities surrounded by gorgeous, not entirely flat land, that there's a lot of diversity to the geography of the state. And, you know, importantly, we have a mushroom that's shaped like a rock called Mushroom Rock. And I think if there's any reason to move to Kansas, it's to see Mushroom Rock. So you've heard it here first. You know, you don't even have to pay to see it. That's the great thing about Kansas.
Marcy, when you interact with people in communities, this image of intolerance, is it something that bothers the people in the rural communities themselves?
Because we're a nonprofit, we try very hard to stay away from politics. Not that the people we first meet know that, and sometimes they're very willing to make their views known right away. But when we go into a town, we're looking for pride in the town, and we're looking for comments and discussion about sustainability. What I would say is that there's, in some towns, even the city council, some of the leadership are people who really have never been away from the town or county. So I would say that their worldview is maybe somewhat limited to what they know. That's how we all are. And so what we try to do is take away the politics and just talk about how a town could move forward, not change so much. Just we want to help the town be the best it can be at being itself. And that takes some of the fear away. So when you talk about being open-minded, for me, the topic is about how to be open-minded about sustaining the town and keeping the town moving forward.
Well, thanks, Marcy. We've got a call now from someone who goes by Mr. Kansas. And Mr. Kansas, I believe we know one another.
We do. We do.
Well, what do you have to share with us?
Oh, well, it's interesting just that just last comment. It's Kansas is so complicated, and it's so I have Kansas children yelling behind me right now. It's so complicated and so much more. There's such a myriad to Kansas that is not understood. Even like the issue of the political issue. Like I'm looking at. I have a sample of a great English poem that was published by E. Haldeman Julius. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
E. Haldeman Julius was the publisher of the largest socialist newspaper in the 20th century. And he was doing it out of Girard, Kansas. He was the first person to actually publish, what was it? It was called The Appeal to Reason, and he was the socialist publisher of the United States. And so he was doing it out of Girard, Kansas. So there's a whole rich, varied history that if people just, like Will was saying, just will, it's just like red and blue, they're entirely missing it's the diversity of the state, and not just the state, the region, and Kansas is part of a region as well. As much as Kansas boosters, we are about the singularity of the state. At the same time, we are part of a larger region that is also quite interesting. So I think that's another thing, is sometimes the state lines, which are arbitrary, are actually lines of division that maybe shouldn't be there. So.
Well, Mr. Kansas, I would like to know why you go by Mr. Kansas. And also, I happen to know you have a daughter named Kansas. I would really like to know the reasoning behind this. I mean, there's something clearly deep here.
Well, the reason is because I grew up in Mission Hills, Kansas, which, as you're familiar with, is probably the least Kansas-looking place on the planet, and it was designed that way. And yet I was born in Kansas and lived in Kansas, and nothing in my experience was in any way Kansas-y as far as I understood what that meant. And so it basically became this life project to try and understand Kansas, and so that's really been what I've done. And yes, my daughter is named Kansas in honor of the state.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Thank you.
Any reaction among my guests here to what we've just heard from Mr. Kansas?
I just say, go, Mr. Kansas. You're doing us proud.
Marcy, had you heard of that socialist publisher out of Kansas?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, he started the Little Blue Book. So there are actually some things to see regarding Haldeman in the Girard area, in their library, as well as the first home he lived in, and some other things. So we do take people on a bit of a Haldeman journey once you get to Girard.
Well, let's hear now from Alyssa in Iola, Kansas. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Power Up.
Well, I'm calling in because I saw on Facebook that you were on here and they were looking for the good news about Kansas, and I've got plenty of good news down here in Iola.
Well, what's your comment, Alyssa?
Well, thanks to Marcy, I actually grew up in the state of California but have moved to Kansas in the last year and have really fallen in love with the state and have been able to start a power-up group here in Iola. For those who don't know what power-ups are, it's 21 to 39-year-olds who are rural by choice, and we've kind of just snowballed into this giant group of people here and have had a lot of support from the community about celebrating what it means to be rural here in Southeast Kansas.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. And is there anywhere we can direct people who are interested in being a part of that?
Yes, we have a Facebook page. It's Power Up Iola, and we're actually having a stoplight dance here on Friday. If they're interested in coming out, you wear red if you're taken, yellow if it's complicated, and green if you're single.
I was wondering what a stoplight party was. You beat me to my next question. Well, thank you, Alyssa.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
Celebrating
Kansas.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. I'm here with Will Averill and Marcy Penner. We're talking about Kansas Pride, and we'd love to hear from you at 816-235-2888. We've got Alan in Mission, Kansas on the line. Hi, Alan.
Good morning.
What can
you
share?
I have had a chance through my employment to cover the entire state of Kansas for 30 years. So I'm well aware of the subtle beauty. We do not have mountains, obviously, and no winter sports to speak of, not even enough snow to snowmobile. But there are so many beautiful places in Kansas, but you have to look closely and you have to keep your eyes at eye level. I can drive down U.S. 50 this time of year on my way to Emporia, and I can find one hawk after another in trees, on fence posts, in the ditches, cattails, and red-winged blackbirds just proliferate. It's a beautiful state, but you cannot communicate that to someone who is going down I-70 as fast as they can or is flying over. There's really no substitute for experience and taking your time and driving the two lanes. Just a fact of life. People are not going to appreciate what they haven't seen.
Well, Alan, do you have a best-kept Kansas secret that you have uncovered in your travels that you'd like to make not so secret on the air right now?
Well, I do love the Alma Creamery and I think a grocery store there and an old opera house was mentioned as well.
Well, thanks so much, Alan.
You are welcome.
Marcy, what about I-70? Do you think that that highway has a relationship with Kansas's reputation?
Well, you know, I never find it as bad as people say it is. I really find it fascinating. So I don't have a problem with it, though. You hear it all the time that I-70 is part of our problem. I mean, even you drive through so many of our physiographic regions when you drive I-70, from the Flint Hills to the Smoky Hills into the High Plains and the Glacial Hills earlier on near Topeka. I think part of it's just its reputation, but it's hard to go off the road, even a mile or 2 miles or 10 miles, where there's a lot of great little details to see. But I guess it is part of our issue, but I don't really have a problem with it. I find it beautiful.
What do you think, Will?
Well, I just like to say that I agree that on first drive past you could miss the state, but there are a couple of actually fundamentally important, I believe, wonderful icons that are right there on I-70 in Goodland, Kansas. There's the giant Van Gogh sunflower painting, which if you look off, you'll actually be able to see from I-70, and I think is one of the more wonderful eccentric sites in the state. You can also get to the world's largest prairie dog just off I-70. Unfortunately, well, I'm going to leave the secret, but if you're driving by Colby, might be worth stopping off to see the world's largest prairie dog. Finally, I think one a thing I would never have noticed if it wasn't pointed out through doing this Facebook page is the billboard sign of Wheat Jesus on I-70 on the way out of Colby, I believe. You will see him. He's kind of if you've not seen the picture before, I highly recommend that you go look it up. It's the face of Jesus buried in wheat.
Did you say buried in wheat?
Fairly buried in wheat. It makes it very hard to determine his size. So he comes off as kind of a little Jesus, a wee wheat Jesus. I think it's one of those things that since we kind of posted it on the page, it's our symbol of, you know, why can't Kansans just get along when you get to a KU K-State rivalry, which always turns out messy on the page. So, you know, Wheat Jesus brings us all together under his weedy power, and we are one united Kansas. So I would highly recommend, if you get a chance, if you're driving on I-70, check out that billboard. You can't miss it.
Well, I want to go to Lois in Kansas City, Kansas. Lois, we just have a second here, but you know a song about Kansas?
Yes, I do.
Can you sing it to us as best you're able?
We're from Kansas, dear old Kansas, the land of sunflowers and wheat. And the rest of it, la, 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 I can't remember it all. And the corn is sweet, where the prairie gently calling, a gentle, gentle you-hoo. And the answer, dear old Kansas, will be ever true to you.
Very nice. Thank you, Lois. Marcy, have you heard that one before?
Oh, not like Lois's song. That was just absolutely beautiful.
Do we still have plenty of sweet corn?
There are some great sweet corn stands all over the state, absolutely. One of the best is here near Bueller. Yes, we have sweet corn.
Well, what else as far as street food? Do you have any last recommendations?
You know, there's a lot of new food trucks, especially in western Kansas, Liberal and Dodge City. So food trucks are coming in, and I think that's a great development. And, you know, I want to say that grocery store in Alma has unfortunately now closed. So if people were attracted to your reading of the description, and this is why we need to get out there and update that guidebook. There's things close. We just need more people to get out there and spend money in all these small towns, and more of them will stay open.
Marcy, how are you conducting that research, and when do you suspect your next book will be out?
We have every town in 80 counties to finish, and I hope to finish by December 24. So I'm hoping the book will come out Christmas of 2015. In the meantime, we do a blog that you can find at kansassampler.org to tell about our travels as we go. We have a Facebook page. It's called IRV, Explore Research Voyage. So we try to share as we go, and the things are just too great not to share.
Too great not to share is, it sounds like, your motto on some level.
Absolutely. We'll be going to Republic County tomorrow, and I'll want to share about Pinky's Bar and Grill in Cortland and the Paul Boyer wood carving, the animated wood carvings of Paul Boyer and the half-mile...
I can't wait to read about it, but we're running out of time. So sadly, I'm going to have to say goodbye now. That's all the time we have for our conversation about Kansas Pride. We're leaving you on a cliffhanger there because we'll have a list from Marcy later today about her best kept secrets in Kansas. I'd like to thank Marcy Penner and Will Averill for joining us today. It's been so much fun, guys.
Thank you.
And now for the next installment of our Go Into Kansas City series. Greg Vranikar grew up in a small town in Nebraska and went to college in Iowa. When he joined the Air Force, he was hoping to get out of the Midwest, to fly over it, as it were. As part of our Go Into Kansas City series, Vranikar tells KCUR's Susan Wilson how he ended up becoming a lifelong Midwest resident instead.
I have to be honest and tell you that when I was looking at Air Force assignments, I asked to be any place but the Midwest, because I'd spent all my time in the Midwest, And the assignment person in Washington, D.C. said, oh, well, we knew you asked that, but we thought you'd really like Kansas City because so many of our officers who come there end up staying there. And that proved to be true with me and with a lot of my colleagues.
Let's go back to the day that you first arrived here, the first couple of days. What were your first impressions?
Kansas City was extremely, the Air Force Base itself and the surrounding area was extremely friendly. And because it was bigger than any place I had ever lived, I not necessarily bargained for that. So I really liked the city. First impressions were very good. I know I came down to the plaza and saw the fountains. I saw Ward Parkway, which is one of my favorite streets. I still go down Ward Parkway on my way to work.
What surprised you most about Kansas City?
I honestly did not know very much about the history of Kansas City before I got here. I learned quite a bit about that because pretty early on I became a member of the Catholic Church at 52nd and Troost, which is St. Francis Xavier Parish. And that parish has a history of great diversity racially, ethnically, age. And by being a member at that parish, I learned a lot about the diversity and history of Kansas City.
How did you describe Kansas City to others when they asked, what's Kansas City like?
Kansas City is a great place to work, which I've found it to be, not only as a professional, as a lawyer and as a fund development professional, but also it's a place that has a very diverse economy. And because of its diverse economy, it lends itself to people not getting pigeonholed in one profession or one level of employment or another. We routinely rub shoulders with people, blue collar, white collar, doesn't really matter. For instance, my wife and I are very big jazz fans, which Kansas City is a great place to be for that. And we often go to bars, which some might consider dives, but we love to be there.
Those are the best kind, the dives.
That's right. We've been fans of Milt Abel, and over the years we've seen a lot of the old timers and now the new timers, many of them in the Bobby Watson's program at the UMKC Conservatory.
Greg Vranikar spoke with KCUR's Susan Wilson as part of our Go Into Kansas City series. Do you have a story about how you ended up in our fair city? Contribute to our Go Into Kansas City series by emailing us, centralstandard@kcur.org. You're hearing Bobby Watson's Midwest Shuffle to take us out. Tune in tomorrow to visit two local museums exhibiting ancient objects excavated from faraway desert lands. That and more tomorrow on Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stay tuned for Up to Date next.